It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, folks. What a football weekend, right? The Saints absolutely destroy the Dallas Cowgirls out there in Texas. And the LSU Fighting Tigers come back from being way behind. I think 17 points at one point in time. So many times during the game, I was getting ready to get up and say, I'm done, can't watch it anymore, need to go do something a little bit more productive. Only to realize, wait, not so fast. Things are changing quick, and they come back and win the game. Tulane plays one heck of a game, hanging with Oklahoma. Obviously, a couple mistakes really cost them. But again, performing at a high level against a quality football team. So very excited for all three teams. Very proud of their play. It was a good football weekend. We've got a great show for you today. We're going to visit with Guy Williams, president of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We'll talk about the interest rate cuts that will be announced on Wednesday. How NIL money has changed college football. The Boeing strike and what it means. We'll talk about the Chinese running scam hubs in Myanmar and how they're exploiting the vulnerable throughout the world. And we'll talk about a couple of other issues dealing with the economy as well. Jeff Nowak joins us in the back half of the 11 o'clock hour, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer. We'll talk about the big game yesterday, and we'll talk a little bit about the upcoming game against the Eagles this weekend. We'll visit with Donald Lane, former Secret Service agent. We'll talk about how was a shooter able to get so close to President Trump. Craig Jacobon joins us, owner of Craig's Electrical and Generator Service, starting the 11 o'clock hour, the aftermath of Francine. A lot of people now considering getting a generator. In fact, that was kind of a little bit of the discussion through the weekend at the coffee club for sure. And we'll talk about what steps one should take in that process. Steve Scalise joins us, first congressional district here in Louisiana. He's also the House Majority Leader. We'll talk about post-Francine recovery. We'll talk about AM radio legislation. And we're definitely going to talk about this assassination attempt on Donald Trump, the former president. I don't know about you folks, but this is very much becoming more and more like a third world country. This is what you see in other countries. This is what we read about and shake our head and are completely mystified about how people can live in a country where we're taking or attempting to take pot shots at our political leaders, those involved in the political process, running for the highest office in the country. And already had part of his ear shot during one assassination attempt. And here we are just weeks later, a second. Really. And it's almost as if we're not even really discussing this a whole lot, right? I mean, most of the information that we've been able to ascertain has been as a result of congressional hearings. So I would assume they're going to start one again this morning because they realize after the last attempt that we circle the wagons and we put out very little information as to what is actually gone on here. Well, here it is weeks later where we've done after action on the first and we're wondering how people are getting so close here on the second. Now, I'm not going to opine a lot about what went on. We'll talk to Donald Lane about this. The information is coming out in drips and drabs. I just listened to the security expert that Tommy Tucker had on his show, that he's had on his show many times, and I agree. One has to wonder what it is that we're actually doing if this information that has been revealed thus far is actually true. And if it is, we're not on our A game. We're not on our A game by any stretch of the imagination. And it may be that this organization, the Secret Service, a quality organization, is stretched. It may be that there's a bunch of openings. It may be, not unlike other law enforcement agencies across the country, they are struggling in order to maintain a healthy complement of human capital, employees. Boots on the ground matter. They matter in war. They matter when you're fighting crime. And they certainly matter when you're providing dignitary protection. And if, in fact, that is the case, at least through this election season, we should be thinking about maybe reassigning some folks that have dignitary protection training from other federal law enforcement agencies and send them to the Secret Service for a short period of time. We're talking about November, possibly December, right? November. And try to square this thing up. Because if you think this country's divided now, if someone successfully takes out either one of these candidates for president, you haven't seen anything yet. This will get ugly fast. And I just don't, it's almost as if we don't take this serious. People are going to the social networks and talking about crazy things and not showing any compassion or care or understanding as to what this means in society today. I don't care how much you hate somebody. You cannot for a moment believe that this is in the best interest of anything that we stand for in this country. There's no excuse for this. Of course, we'll have the deflection, the denial, the diversion, the evasion of the topic. We'll be wanting to talk about the firearm used as opposed to the mental health of the individual, the state of this country, the lack of respect that we have for our institutions today that's being exhibited by all, and not an understanding in the least bit as to what this ultimately means. I mean, our next guest, Steve Scalise, he knows better than anybody. Right? He was a breath away from not being here with us. We need to stand up collectively and collaboratively together. It doesn't matter if you're a D or R and I. It doesn't matter if you're pro-abortion, pro-life. None of those things matter when public safety has denigrated to the point where our political and elected leaders can be at risk on any given day. None of these other things matter. Because that is the first step to tyranny in the streets. And we've seen it in other countries, how this plays out. We see it right now in some of the African nations and how it's playing out at this very moment. We're seeing it in some of the Middle Eastern countries, as they're completely and totally abusing the rights and privileges and the ability to live, the ability to look somebody in the eye in the Middle East. We've seen Sharia law and what that is actually, how it plays itself out. In other words, we have seen the extremes. The question here is whether or not we're going to exhibit emotional intelligence, or we will continue to act out on emotion and allowing that part of the brain, otherwise known as the amygdala, that processes emotion so many thousand times faster than other bits of information, that we act out on that emotion And, of course, we have the most dangerous tool in the world to exhibit that we cannot manage our emotions, the social networks. We get out there and we start saying incredibly stupid things. And then that builds, and it has an exponential impact on the way that people are thinking and what they're doing and what they can say. And no one takes a breath. Everyone reacts, 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 reacts. No one's processing. We're jumping to conclusions. We're engaging in conjecture. We're speaking in absolutes, never realizing that we're fueling the fire. We're standing there with the proverbial charcoal lighter can, just sprinkling the fire over and over again. To what end? For what purpose? For what reason? And we've just walked right past the obvious, the event itself, the happenstance, where someone is setting up with a rifle, not sure exactly what type it was, within hundreds of yards of the former president of this country, with the desire, obviously, to kill him. And it's almost as though we think this is okay. Everything is justified for the sake of politics, for the sake of an ideology, for the sake of speaking their truth. I don't agree with everyone's truth, what they say, see as their truth, but I don't want to go killing people for it either. This country is really at a fragile, fragile point in time, and has been for a period of time now, because this zero-sum game that we're playing here, where we're attempting to modify institutions because things are not going our way, we're seeking to change things, we're seeking to bully people into things, we're seeking to do all kinds of issues. More importantly, we're just flat out lying, has to come to an end for the sake of the win. Win at all costs. We have no moral compass. We've completely compromised it. No one cares, and everyone gets a pass. You know, the mainstream media used to be those folks that kept things in check. And it's amazing, a week later, after the debate, we're still fact-checking what was said at the debate. And what's really come out and was somewhat interesting is that we're even now sucking at fact-checking. I talked about transgender operations in prisons for illegals that was supported by Kamala Harris before the debate. I saw the ACLU questionnaire. I saw the answers. They validated that it was, in fact, legitimate. And yet, so many leading publications hadn't done their homework. It's amazing when you think about this that no one is really willing to step out there and embrace when someone is saying, and this individual didn't deny it at the debate, meaning Kamala Harris, but the moderator seemed incredulous. And it was already out there and had been validated, right? The New Yorker said, what the hell was he talking about? No one knows, the writer said. Interestingly, CNN has not really been the purveyor of truth as it relates to Republicans in general and Donald Trump in particular, had reported on this last week on the K-File on the CNN website. He also, the author, Andrew Kaczynski, actually talked about it on the Aaron Burnett show. And it began to make its way through the media about what was answered on the American Civil Liberties ACLU questionnaire, that she had professed her support for taxpayer-funded sex change operations for illegal immigrants in custody. Time magazine came right out and said the former president falsely claimed that Harris wants to do transgender operations on illegal aliens in prison. They had three reporters, three bylines, and all of them got it wrong. The Atlantic said the same thing, talking about strange things, even by his own standards. And then they took a breath, because they were responding with emotion. They didn't exhibit emotional intelligence. They just emotionally reacted to it, thought it was so whacked out that it couldn't possibly be true, and now they've had to backstroke. Time magazine eventually corrected reporting and said, as a presidential candidate in 2019, Harris filled out a questionnaire saying she supported taxpayer-funded gender transition treatment for detained immigrants. The Atlantic likewise affixed an editor's note to its coverage, conceding that the thing sounded insane to its staff writer, but it is actually something that Vice President Harris supports. But, you know, the interesting thing about the approach here is that had it been flipped, right, and had she said it about Donald Trump, right, it would not only have been corrected, but it would have then moved to an attack on the position. But not this time. I just highlight that because it's being reported on a lot since the debate this past week. But it's emblematic of the place that we find ourselves in the country today, where we are actually engaged in propaganda spreading for the purposes of a political ideology. And we're actually not reporting news. Now, before I start getting all the nasty texts, let us recognize one thing. This is not a news show. This is an opinion show. And there is a wide chasm between the two that a lot of folks, again, want to react emotionally, want to talk about fairness, want to talk about this, want to talk about that. This is not a news show. I'm not reporting news. I'm rendering an opinion with a healthy mix of bringing on guests to talk about their opinion. Some from the left, some from the right, some in the middle. I wish there were more from the left, but they don't want to come on a conservative talk show host. They don't want to be challenged. They don't want to engage in healthy debate about the issues. Rare is the case. In fact, if you watch cable news or others, mainstream media, they even have a difficult time finding folks to come on to talk about the opposing point of view. Because it's never one-on-one. It's three-on-one, four-on-one, five-on-one, whatever it may be, as opposed to having that healthy debate. But this is where we are. And it's fueling, I believe, this emotional response to everything that's going on and driving a zero-sum game in society today. And at some point, somewhere, somehow, I don't have the answer to this question at all. It has to change, and it better change soon. We'll be right back.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by U.S. Congressman Steve Scalise from the 1st Congressional District of Louisiana and the House Majority Leader. Steve, welcome to the show.
Hey, Noel. Great to be back with you.
Thank you, Steve. Steve, news breaking yesterday relative to an attempt on President Trump's life yet again must be a chilling reminder for you.
Yeah, no, I mean, alarming. It's you know, you get angry, you know, brings back obviously bad memories too. But, you know, the fact that this is the second time this has happened, you know, a lot of things need to be addressed. You know, the language, the vitriol, but also the Secret Service protection level. And we've been talking to the Secret Service about this for a while, and for whatever reason, they still haven't ramped up the number of officers. And that has to change.
I'm told that they have significant shortages in that organization. I'm also told it could be as many as 1,000. It would seem to me that during this election season that we would be, you know, reaching out to other federal agencies for people that have dignitary protection training to try and bolster the troops after two attempts on the former president. I think it requires shock and awe, right?
Yeah, but it also requires a few things. One, a change in how they allocate officers, but two, a change. They've changed over the years the criteria and how they hire people, and gotten away from the basics of what you hire somebody to be a Secret Service agent for, you know, and try to get, you know, DEI woke things implemented in the criteria for hiring. And that's just not why you're supposed to be hiring Secret Service agents. They're supposed to be the best people that are fit to protect presidents, vice presidents, and former presidents.
Yeah, I mean, the demands are great, right? I mean, when you get in the heat of the moment, heat of the battle, you want those that are the highest performing individuals. No different than your special forces in the military. They are charged with the most difficult missions that there are, which is similar to what happens here. I agree. I mean, I think the standards have to be high, and we have to adopt the mentality that we're not willing to accept anything less, right?
Right. And there are some standards that have been changed that prohibit some of those special forces you've referenced. For example, you know, Navy SEALs who come off duty and, you know, want to, after they retire, want to go into something like the Secret Service, some of the rules block them from even applying. I mean, those are the sort of things they've got to look at in a different way and stop giving us excuses of, well, we don't have enough people. There's a lot of really qualified people who have done some incredibly amazing, brave things who want to go into the Secret Service who they aren't even letting apply. You know, so they've got to look at a whole lot of their internal policies.
Yeah, it's all about culture. When you have high-performing individuals that are, you know, are lured to an agency that has a culture that's less than that's not where they want to be, right? Because they understand the intricacies and the difficulties of the task that they're charged with, and they take it seriously.
Yeah, and when they've changed some of the standards over the years, again, to shift the focus away from their main mission and to go into some of the DEI and woke objectives, it does demoralize the people that are already there or other people that would otherwise look at applying.
Steve, is this something that the committee that was previously investigating what happened in Pennsylvania, are they going to engage in the same approach with this attempt?
I'm going to be talking to the speaker about that, but, you know, obviously there are a lot of different circumstances with this one. You know, we'll determine if we need to get more information. You know, we are getting a few more facts from the Secret Service than we were last time. They were unbelievably non-transparent last time, to the point where they were flat out lying to us and the public about what happened. Initially, they said, no, the president's team was not denied initial protection. And then later they acknowledged, yes, they did deny additional protection. Why they misled the public for over a week, I have no idea. And that's when, you know, we knew we had to get our own investigation, get our own answers, and we're starting to.
Yeah, I hope that it will be more forthright, not as combative. One would think that we're all on the same team, and one would think that we want to accomplish the same outcome, right, where we have adequate dignitary protection for those serving our country. I mean,
yeah,
you know, this is
a
fine line. Yeah, and this is a fine line between, you know, being an organized, structured, constitutional republic and being a third world country. I mean, we read about this in African nations, right, where they're killing their leaders one after the other and they have a coup about every other week.
Yeah, and, you know, when you've got the leading candidate for president who's had now two assassination attempts on his life, and very close. I mean, this shooter was one hole away on the golf course from having a direct shot with a scoped rifle at Donald Trump. I mean, again, you know, you don't want luck to be the main factor in how you protect a candidate or former president of the United States. I mean, this is this should be a lot more sophisticated, and it's just concerning that you see this happen over and over again. When, you know, we've seen the rhetoric, and believe me, the rhetoric needs to change. You know, when every day they're out there saying Donald Trump's a threat to democracy, threat to democracy, you could see the postings from this this attempted assassin. He was moved by some of that stuff. And so that language needs to change. I haven't seen the urgency from those saying it to just stop saying it. You know, if you don't like Donald Trump's policies, talk about what you don't like about Donald Trump's policies. But when they keep saying this incendiary rhetoric, there are people listening and are triggered who are unhinged. Whatever you want to say about somebody, if you're going to attempt to go kill a candidate for president of the United States, something's off with you. And, you know, the people that are saying this, the dog whistle that goes with it, they know what they're doing. They've got to stop doing it.
Yeah, and it's interesting because we don't hear the same thing in the characterization of the anti-Semitic stuff that's going on campuses across the country. Last year, shutting campuses down, costing taxpayers money, and then not holding any of the students accountable. And then, you know, school starts again, it happens again, and who do they call? The first responder community, yet again. The taxpayers have to fund it. But these people are not a threat to democracy because you don't hear them characterized in that way. And really, they are the threat to democracy.
And yet they're directly threatening Jewish students. You know, I've talked to some of these, you know, these student leaders. We've had a lot of the students who have been threatened come meet with us. And they're so angry, they're paying, you know, $70,000 a year in some cases or more to go to some of these colleges. And they're being yelled at while they're in class for being Jewish. I mean, this is going on in 2024. No, this isn't the 1920s and 30s, for God's sake. And yet some of these college presidents are allowing it, even though their own student codes of conduct say it's not allowed on campus, they're allowing it if it's being directed against Jewish students. And that's, you know, again, another thing that should not be allowed in our country. And then if they dare get arrested, they're let out the next day or that night by some of these prosecutors that just, you know, ran on platforms of saying let out criminals. I mean, you know, how are you going to ever stop this cycle?
Steve, there are moments I feel like I'm watching Animal House 2. That everybody's on double secret probation and there's never any accountability.
Yeah, and, you know, look, it's cost a few college presidents their careers, but not enough. I mean, you know, it's got to be crystal clear. If you don't protect all students, you know, it shouldn't matter what their faith is, Noel. You know, if you're being threatened for what you believe in on college campus, you know, most college student codes of conduct are very clear that you're not allowed to do that. And yet some of these colleges are looking the other way if it's targeted against Jewish students or a student that's supporting the Jewish state of Israel. And why? I mean, what changed? What, you know, go change your student policy if that's really what you believe in, and you're probably going to see a major drop in enrollment. Some of them are seeing a major drop in enrollment anyway, and they should. Because, again, they're not giving this tuition away for free, and then they're not protecting their students or only certain students. And that's discrimination, and it's unfair application of their own code of conduct. And I think people are fed up with it.
Yeah. You know what's interesting, too, is that we're advocating, these students are advocating on behalf of a belief that most of these students wouldn't be able to engage in half the activities that they engage in here in the United States, but they just can't see the forest for the trees. And it's just simply amazing to me. And you add to that, a healthy portion of the Jewish population in Israel supports a two-state solution. And yet they just indiscriminately attack Jews for being Jewish.
Yeah, you know, and you see these chants of, you know, from the river to the sea, and then you go ask them which river and which sea, and they can't even tell you. You know, when Benjamin Netanyahu came to a joint session of Congress a few weeks ago, he called them useful idiots. I mean, if you're allowing yourself to be used by Hamas, a terrorist organization, to in essence repeat their chants of death and destruction to Israel and the Jews, shame on you if you don't even know what you're talking about when the things you're saying really do call for the destruction and the end of Israel and the death of Jews. I mean, what are you doing? How is your upbringing that once makes you want to do this? But at the same time, you know, this is going on. You got to call it out. You got to stand up against it and just not tolerate it in this country. And it's going on before our very eyes. But look, I've been over to Israel. I've actually went into Palestinian territory and met with some of the Palestinian leaders. And when you talk to them about a two-state solution, and Noel, this is critically important. You know, when you say, do you want a two-state solution? They'll kind of nod. And then when you say, will you support as part of that two-state solution, Israel as a Jewish state? And that's the seminal question. Because what is a two-state solution? It's two different cultures and people living side by side in two states, respecting each other, not wanting to go to war every day. When you say, will you respect Israel as a Jewish state? Silence, dead silence, because they won't do it. What they want is a two-state solution, and then they want to go and invade Israel and take that and have a one-state solution. And that's where they are right now. So how do you negotiate with somebody who doesn't really want a two-state solution when that's the objective? Israel would take the deal tomorrow, but the other side won't. And the leadership of the Palestinian Authority and all the other groups over there, you know, they elected Hamas to be their leadership, and Hamas wants to kill Jews. That's kind of hard to get a deal of peace with somebody on the other side that agrees that way. So you got to recognize it's not two people wanting the same thing or anywhere close right now.
Well, and it's why no other Middle Eastern country will even accept Palestinians, right? Because there's a history of them trying to overthrow and create a coup in every one of those countries.
Yeah, you saw that with Egypt. You saw that with Jordan. I've met with their leaders.
Syria.
They want to help get to a two-state solution, but they're not taking anybody in because they know it would lead to unrest in their countries.
Steve, how does this change? I mean, it seems to me that a lot of the signaling has to start right there in Congress. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, I do think we need to continue to support Israel and their right to defend themselves. And you see a split Congress right now. On some of the votes we've had, you do see some people walking away from Israel and trying, again, to live in this utopia world.
But I'm just talking about this vitriol. I'm talking about this vitriol right now in this country. I mean, obviously, what's going on in the Middle East is one of the things that's driving the vitriol. This election process is driving the vitriol. How does this change?
Yeah, and like I've said, and I say this in Washington all the time, you know, you got to drop the personality talk and get back to talking about policy. But when you see it as mainstream, for people to just keep saying over and over again, you know, Trump's a threat to democracy, threat to democracy, comparing him to Hitler, all of these things. You know, there are unhinged people who listen to that and who are clearly taking it as a sign that they personally need to go stop him. You know, and you've seen two specific cases now where people tried and came really darn close, Noel, really darn close to taking him out. You know, this is not accidental, and the rhetoric is driving it. And so, you know, the people that are saying those things, and, you know, it starts at the top. I mean, Kamala, you know, I appreciate some of the words she said yesterday, but she's got to stop saying, and she was just saying last week, again, that Trump's a threat to democracy. We can't let him get in the Oval Office. I mean, why? Go talk about, you know, you don't like the fact that he's going to secure the border, that he's going to keep tax rates low, whatever your reason is. You know, you can't say the demonizing things as if somebody out there that's listening might take it the wrong way and say, all right, they're going to go personally try to stop him by using violence. It's just not acceptable, and it's got to start at the top.
Yeah, and meanwhile, attempting to or desire to change institutions because they're not falling within their ideology at the present time. And we know that this is a give and take, and it goes through cycles in this country. We just don't want to exhibit the patience and the time in order to do so, right? I mean, that's what we've done historically.
It's a fragile time. You know, we all know we've been through tough times before. You can go back to the Civil War, is probably the most volatile since the Revolutionary War. But this is a time where it's definitely, you know, a country incredibly divided, and there's hypercharged rhetoric, but, you know, you got to dial it down, and you got to recognize the role that's being played when you're saying those kind of things and what it's doing to people. It's literally leading people to try to go and take Trump out. And you know, I don't know of a candidate for president, a former president who's been more personally persecuted than Donald Trump. I mean, you know, how many times have they gone after him, his family, over and over again, and he keeps coming back? And I appreciate the resilience, but you shouldn't have to put your life at risk to fight for something you believe in.
And he has every right to espouse his opinions in America, and it doesn't mean we're going to agree with them all, but he has the right, and we ought to be more worried about preserving that right than anything else. Steve Scalise, thank you so
Absolutely.
Much for joining us. We know you're incredibly busy. We appreciate the time you spent with us this morning. Best of luck to you in
Always
your reelection effort, and stay safe.
Thanks a lot, Noel. God bless you.
All right, folks, we will be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Open Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. So on the text line, it says, America was never this divided until Trump. And you know where I stand with Donald Trump. I said we should have put him in the rearview mirror back on January 7th. I didn't think that he was the future of the Republican Party. I still don't believe that. But I'm curious, what position did he take on an issue that divided the country? We don't ever seem to kind of focus in on that. Everyone keeps talking about it. He's a threat to democracy. What position does he take on any issue that divides this country? A lot of folks are going to say immigration. All his position has been nothing more than a recantation of what the law provides at the present time. That couldn't be what's dividing the country, to actually enforce the laws that were passed by Congress, to enforce the laws that are passed by state legislative bodies across the country, to be a country of principles, laws, and orders. Now, he's not the most articulate individual, and the manner in which he says some of these things may be a little whacked out on occasion, but is that actually what's dividing the country? Curious. We'll be right back. So on a text line, it says America was never this divided until Trump. And you know where I stand with Donald Trump. I said we should have put him in the rearview mirror back on January 7th. I didn't think that he was the future of the Republican Party. I still don't believe that. But I'm curious, what position did he take on an issue that divided the country? We don't ever seem to kind of focus in on that. Everyone keeps talking about it. He's a threat to democracy. What position does he take on any issue that divides this country? A lot of folks are going to say immigration. All he's taught, his position has been nothing more than a recantation of what the law provides at the present time. That couldn't be what's dividing the country, to actually enforce the laws that were passed by Congress, to enforce the laws that are passed by state legislative bodies across the country, to be a country of principles, laws, and orders. Now, he's not the most articulate individual, and the manner in which he says some of these things may be a little whacked out on occasion, but is that actually what's dividing the country? Curious. We'll be right back.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valenti and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.